This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Well, Dr. Kent Brandley and Nancy Reipold, the two American aid workers who contracted Ebola in Liberia during one of the worst outbreaks that the continent has seen, returned to the United States for treatment in Atlanta Hospital, prompting many to fear that this could bring the deadly virus to our shores. Well, here with more on this is Dr. Timothy Endy. He's the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Endy. Thank you very much for having me. So these two patients were brought to the United States, and a lot of precautions were taken to try to keep them isolated. Why are these precautions so crucial in terms of Ebola?
Well, in part, the outbreak that's occurring in the three countries in Africa right now, and it's been known historically that Ebola is contagious, and it's spread by human-to-human contact, especially from infected body fluids. Which could be, for example, vomit or bleeding. And so that the precautions are needed to prevent the spread to the healthcare providers who are taking care of them.
Let's start with, I think a lot of people are kind of bandying the term about Ebola, but what exactly is Ebola?
Well, Ebola is a virus and is in a family of viruses called the filoviruses. Their genetic code is consisting of RNA or ribonucleic acid. And so it's an RNA virus, and it has a very distinctive morphology. It's a long, thin virus with a characteristic curve at the end of it called a shepherd's crook. So that when you see it under a high-powered microscope, like an electron microscope, the features are very distinctive for the filoviruses. There are several, I think there are five or six strains of Ebola virus, named from the countries where they're isolated, like Zaire. And then there's a close cousin of Ebola called Marburg, which also produces a very similar set of symptoms and hemorrhagic disease, as well as very responsible for some very well-known large outbreaks in Africa.
Do we know where it came from?
No one's quite sure, and there's been a lot of investigations. There's one particular cave in Zaire that was investigated from an outbreak where they've never really found a source, though it's been isolated from a particular bat called a fruit bat from Africa, and they think that that might be the reservoir for this virus.
So it had jumped from animal to human, which not all viruses do, and now basically once it's jumped to humans, human to human contact is the way it's being spread.
Correct.
So why is it so deadly? I read somewhere it kills 50 to 90% of its victims.
Well, it's a very what we call pathogenic virus, and what's characteristic of a lot of viruses that do what you described as jump from one species to another. The virus's whole goal is actually to adapt to that particular host. So killing the host doesn't really do the virus very much service in its ability to transmit and propagate. So in a reservoir host, like in a fruit bat, for example, they don't become sick or die from the virus. The virus actually is replicating.
They're just a carrier.
Just a carrier. But when they jump to another species, they're not well adapted, and they produce a lot of tissue and organ damage, and that results in the severity of the symptoms and also the high mortality. Rabies virus is a great example of that. There's a reservoir in bats, for example, but when it goes into humans from the bite or saliva of that reservoir host, then the mortality is like near 100%.
Wow. So what causes death? What actually leads to someone to die from Ebola?
Well, there's such tremendous cell and tissue damage that there's organ failure. So kidney failure, liver failure, because of all the tissue destruction that goes on. And so death is by those organs not being able to function very well. Plus, it causes a hemorrhagic disease, so you're not able to clot your blood as well, and you bleed out into the gastrointestinal tract and can die from bleeding.
So right now, do they really understand how it's transmitted? I've read many, many things in the news they're talking about. It's transmitted, you know, basically bodily fluids and direct contact. But these two workers, for example, that were in Africa, were covered and were wearing hazmat suits, I would think, and taking precautions, do we really understand fully how this disease is transmitted?
Well, I think there's still a lot of questions that we don't understand about transmission. We do know that body fluids are infected and can be transmitted to humans through splashing the eye, the mucous membranes, through needle sticks and such. In these two particular patients, it's not really clear. I'm not familiar with what the circumstances were, how they got infected. But I think, you know, you have to understand the conditions that they're working on in these countries. It's very primitive. Even though they are wearing containment type clothing, it's probably 110 degrees there. They're sweating profusely. There's no air conditioning. They're overtired. There's fatigue. There's a lot of chaos going on. You can probably imagine some breaks in procedures that results in infection.
So that it's not clear whether it was a breakdown. It's more likely that there was a breakdown in procedure or in prevention that caused them to become infected, is what you're postulating, rather than some unknown source or reason for transmission.
Yeah, that's exactly what I would, you know, guess. I can imagine they're probably working 14, 15-hour days, and your concentration level and your procedures can take a hit at the end of a long day.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with infectious disease expert Dr. Timothy Endy, and we're talking about Ebola. Well, you've had a very special history with Ebola. Tell us about that.
Well, I had the privilege of being the head of virology at the United States Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Disease, which is located at Fort Detrick in the early 2000s. Fort Detrick is it's a high-level containment laboratory. It's called the BO4 lab. Richard Preston wrote a book about it called The Hot Zone.
Oh, yeah.
And it's where you wear the blue suits and the air cables and all that. And my division was in charge of developing vaccines and therapeutics and understanding the pathogenesis of Ebola, Marburg, and some other nasty viruses, one's called Crimean Congo hemorrhagic fever. So I had the opportunity to be in the lab and, you know, work on projects with Ebola.
Was any progress made during the time you were there in terms of either talking about developing a vaccine or treatment protocols?
There's a lot of progress. There is a number of candidate vaccines that showed very good promise in non-human primate studies.
But not yet. And that was the other point that I wanted to bring out, is that these two individuals who were brought here were given some kind of a treatment that was more of a experimental treatment, this ZMAT mm-hmm. product that I guess is in development. And does that suggest that we're closer to more effective treatment for something like Ebola, or even to develop prevention like a vaccine?
Well, I think there are a number of different candidate vaccines that have shown some preliminary promise in animal studies for protection. I'm not familiar with the ZMAP product in itself, though I know it's a monoclonal antibody that's very specific for the Ebola virus. And antibody has been used historically. For example, the Russians have been using hyperimmune globulin, which is a concentrated immune globulin for the treatment and protection of Ebola. But the data from that is kind of iffy in terms of how protective it is.
So we're not quite there yet. And we don't even know if this ZMAT really has had an influence or whether the people are just recovering on their own with...
That's right. You know, it hasn't been done in a controlled fashion. It's the subject size is two people. But certainly from what you hear on the news, it sounds very promising.
So in this era of global travel and era of global diseases, therefore... I mean, anything is a plane ride away from coming to our shores. At one point, I talked to you many years ago about dengue, and at that time, dengue had just started showing itself on the continental United States, and it had been in other places, third world countries before that. So we are all really an international or global community these days. What should we be doing, or could we be doing, and why is it the case that we don't need to fear perhaps the spread of these diseases here in the United States? What's in place here?
Well, you know, it's all about infrastructure. and certainly the Ebola outbreaks that are occurring in the African countries in large part is blamed on the lack of infrastructure there. So, you know, we in the United States are privileged to have a very well organized and functional public health system. We have just outstanding standards of health care delivery. And
we know also how to isolate and quarantine and prevent the spread of these kinds of diseases once they're identified.
That's true. But not to to be overly optimistic, you know, we are still vulnerable. And I can tell you numbers of examples. West Nile is a great one, right? Where it was introduced in New York City and within a matter of 5 years spread through the entire continental United States, producing thousands of deaths. Mm. So West Nile is an example of how vulnerable we are to these pathogens that can arrive from a traveler that goes from Africa to Syracuse, New York, in about 30 hours by airplane. And it's happened, and it's happened before. You know, we here at Upstate, we treat 12 to 15 cases of severe malaria a year. And these are from all travelers who come out of endemic countries with malaria.
So what would happen, or what does happen, when someone comes to the ED with these kinds of symptoms where you worry about either malaria or something like Ebola? What actually takes place?
Well, first is recognition, you know, asking the right questions and then recognizing what potentially could be some serious infection that's causing the patient's problem. The second is if it's contagious. Certainly the ED is well set up in Upstate, has the facilities for the proper isolation of patients, and then the infection control practices to protect the healthcare providers from becoming infected in the process.
And in the past, in these circumstances that you've alluded to, you were able to contain the problem.
Sure. Yeah. You know, we have naturally contagious infections as well in Onondaga County, tuberculosis being one of them. And we get TB patients all the time. And there are isolation procedures and special masks that we wear to protect ourselves.
I mean, there's been talk about SARS, avian flu, many of these types of things mm-hmm. have been threats. And yet, what you seems to be underscoring is that with the right public health measures and the right infection control within institutions and within the public at large, much of that can be forestalled.
Absolutely. But the very first critical step is recognition. And that can be a very important critical step.
And it sounds like right now in this country, they are testing people before they get on planes from those three countries, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Guinea. And they're also being tested when they get here. So we are taking those precautions in terms of who's showing up with potential symptoms.
Yes.
And as we said, you're only spreading the disease when you're symptomatic?
There is a symptomatic period with fever, but you're probably spreading the disease several days before the onset of the severe symptoms because the virus is actually in your blood. So probably just before the symptoms, and then for probably several weeks after the symptoms have gone away, you might be still infected, you know, being able to transmit the infection.
Well, I appreciate all this, you know, insight and hopefulness that we are in good shape in this country and clearly here in this region. And I want to thank you so much for coming in and hopefully allaying some of our fears. My guest has been Dr. Timothy Endy, Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.